So we're doing part two of our class on intimacy, and we'll try to deal from the angle of the questions that were asked. Someone asked, intimacy should be done for the sake of heaven and with pure thoughts. I have no idea what this means. Okay, so let's discuss what it means. What does it mean that intimacy should be done for the sake of heaven? I didn't say intimacy should be done for the sake of heaven. I never said that. Sorry. It does say that in Shulchan Aruch. There is such a concept of doing intimacy for the sake of heaven. That's a level of piety. Let's read what the Shulchan Aruch actually says about what one's thoughts should be about intimacy, but I want to give a lot of background as we read through it. So we're going to deal with the question, can a couple be intimate when they're drunk? Can a husband be with his wife when he's thinking about a different woman? Now, we'll deal with a few other questions as we deal with it, but I want you to take a step back and think about what's lying behind the questions. The first thought that a guy thinks is, I can understand that question, but let's think differently. If the idea of intimacy is love, so what we're going to see is that the direction that the halacha faces us, the direction that the halacha focuses us, is about intimacy being about love. Do you love the person you're with if you're thinking about someone else when you're with them? Is there real love going on when the two are drunk? Or one of them is drunk? So you have to understand where the halacha is coming from when the halacha says the two should not be intimate when they're drunk. The idea here is not that the two can't sit down and have a cup of wine before they're intimate. The idea is the halacha wants you to really love the person. Not to have a situation where one is taking advantage of the other or whatnot. So let's go through the halachos in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Reish Mem. So Shulchan Aruch tells us, number one, the minimum responsibility of a husband for intimacy. And it depends on a person's job. Meaning the halacha tells us one of the things a husband owes his wife is ona, a certain amount of time, a certain frequency of being intimate. So what that means is that let's take a standard couple. So the wife had her onset, and then they were prohibited for 13 days. Basically, what happens is, from the time her onset begins until her onset ends, so they're prohibited, they can't touch, the beds are separate. And then, when her onset ends, which usually takes anywhere between 5 and 7 days, so then she checks herself for another 7 days to make sure she's clean. That's a standard halacha. And then, after 7 days of checking herself every morning and every night, then she goes to mikveh. So imagine they haven't touched one another. They can talk, they eat together, but their beds have been separate every night, right? So she comes home from mikveh, and he says, honey, it's the Super Bowl tonight. You understand, right? No. There's a biblical mitzvah that he has to be intimate with her the night she comes back from mikveh. Imagine he's going off on a business trip for 2 weeks. So he says, honey, you know, I'm really all charged up and all these important meetings. I really got to get a good night's rest. No. Biblical mitzvah, stop your life. You owe to your wife the night before you go off on a trip to be intimate with her. He comes back from the trip and he says, boy, the trip was amazing, but you know, I'm so tired. We'll talk tomorrow. No. Stop your life. Your wife comes first. The halacha says you owe to her biblical mitzvah on that night to be with your wife. You need a nap, go take a nap. That's fine. But you owe it to your wife. So if you think about it for a minute, the halacha that tells us, aside from the frequency, how often during the week a couple has a minimum, again, it's not a maximum. The halacha also tells us that there are going to be times when a guy might be more inclined to say, let's talk tomorrow night. Let's talk in 2 weeks. Comes the halacha and says, no, you owe it to your wife. What do you mean? You got to show her you love her. So tonight, to you guys, it might seem ridiculous that a guy would say that. But we're still going to discuss that the halacha expects a certain amount of foreplay. The halacha expects that intimacy doesn't happen in 2 minutes. Intimacy happens in 2 hours. That there's a lot of romance leading up to it. The halacha expects that the husband is a gentleman and he cares for his wife and he cares to show her his affection. And that's, according to some, that's why intimacy in the Torah is called onah, time. Because a man's approach to intimacy is, we got 2 minutes, perfect. A woman's approach is, hey, we got 2 hours, perfect, right? Two totally different approaches to intimacy. But the Torah expects us that intimacy is supposed to be a show of love. Well, if it's a show of love, then I'm supposed to take time. Now, it's not etched in stone. A couple could do whatever they want, like we said in the beginning. The halacha doesn't demand it, but the halacha expects it. The halacha expects that. So that's the first sif, and this siman tells us that there are certain times when a husband is biblically supposed to be with his wife. Now, let's say both of them decide they want to see the Super Bowl tonight. She says, you know, it's our daughter's wedding tonight. You know, I know I'm supposed to go to mikveh, but I'm supposed to be at the wedding. So they both decide that they're going to push it off by a night. They could do that. The halacha doesn't tell you, you know, I'm going to tell you, you must. The halacha says, you should. And if you both are okay with postponing it by a night, it's not recommended, it's not right. But no one's going to tell you. No, it's not a sin if they're both willing to postpone it by a night. That's up to them. So that's, we have one more biblical obligation. And that is, if a husband sees that his wife is putting on perfume and putting on jewelry and trying to show him that, hey, take a look, Mac, notice I'm here. So then the halacha gives him a biblical mitzvah to be intimate with her that night because she's showing him she wants love. Now, I always say, people are so machmir in so many areas of their life, they take on stringencies. This is also a biblical mitzvah. If you're not sure if she's trying to hint something, so be machmir. What's wrong? It's a biblical mitzvah, so you show her a little more love. Again, this goes back to the point we began with, that intimacy is about showing love. If it's really about showing love, if it's not taking, it's giving, so then it's the most beautiful thing there is.
What do you mean by showing love?
In 1 second. Yes, Suri.
Well, I mean, in my mind, it's like the woman who's more likely to say, like, oh, I need a break right now. And then the guy would say, well, you had a break. It was, you know, during your time of prohibition. She's like, yeah, just, you know, I like it. And how are you supposed to deal with that?
So, it is very common that there is a par between a man's desire and need for intimacy and a woman's desire and need for intimacy. Usually that par stems from the man not being kind enough in the bedroom. If he would take more time to ensure that she's enjoying what's going on, then it's highly unlikely that would happen. It does happen because usually it's unnatural. It doesn't come easy to a man to do that. The most natural thing for a guy is that intimacy should be 2 minutes. You want, we'll meet again in 2 hours for another 2 minutes. But you want to spend 2 hours before those 2 minutes? Come on, what's that? The Super Bowl's happening. Let's have a beer, you know. There are other things to do in life. A person has to learn. One of the things a person can learn is that intimacy can involve a lot more romance, a lot more time spent together, a lot more of what they call foreplay, and that's the way it should be. The halacha expects a man to take the time. You guys know the term orgasm. So the halacha expects a man to bring his wife to that before he gets there, or simultaneously, but for sure to give his wife the pleasure of being intimate. And it is most common in most of the world that people don't do that. People don't bother taking the time to make their wife excited and happy and take the time for romance. It's true, there are different times, and at different times in people's lives, so they have different levels of desire. Usually, when a couple gets married, so the husband is like a guy who's been walking through the desert, and he suddenly is offered a normal meal after months of living on a half a slice of bread and dry, coarse water. So now he's going to be ravenous, and he's going to sit there and stuff his face. So that's the way a guy is when he first gets married. It's normal that a guy, after coming out of the desert, is going to spend the first period of time, which for some people can be 6 months, and for some people can be 3 years. But there is a period, a time when a person is ravenous when he enters marriage. But then he's supposed to calm down. And then you enter a certain norm within marriage. And that norm is where the halacha comes into play and says there's a minimum you owe your wife. At your stage of the game, it seems strange. Why does the halacha have to tell me a minimum? What do you mean? And the answer is because after you guys get used to normal married life, there comes a point where there's only so much chocolate ice cream you can eat. If you're going to eat chocolate ice cream every night, at some point, you get tired of it. And then you're willing to say, let's see the chocolate ice cream next month. And the halacha says, no, you don't. No, you don't. I'm saying, you think that it's a... But a person does come to that. Yes?
You keep saying that it's about Showing love. I don't know what you mean by that, and what's the contrary?
Okay, so I'll tell you. Showing love means that a person takes time to caress. A person takes time to express one's affection, both physically. I'm not talking about a person being intimate. Showing love can be spending time hugging and kissing with clothes on, or with less clothes on. But it doesn't have to be what a guy's thought is, in a guy's mind. So there's one thing, and that's he wants to, what they call, hit a home run. But that's no. There's a first base and a second base and a third base. And there are stages before you reach the climax where a person should be building up to that. And if a person is building up to that, so there are two things that should be happening. There should be a lot of touching and caressing and kissing. And that's something which a guy is very easily willing to forgo. And there should be talk, which is unnatural to a guy. A woman needs to hear that she's loved and appreciated, and that she's beautiful, and that he enjoys being with her. And to a guy, men in the bedroom become mutes. It's like they suddenly they have nothing to say, and that's wrong. A person should be spending time building up to the climax. Building up is both verbally and also physically. That means taking a lot of time passing the stages. In a guy's mind, why do we have to take time? We both know where we're headed, so let's get there right now. No, that's not what you want. Many men find it annoying that a woman doesn't want to be intimate the first second you walk into the bedroom. On the contrary, that's normal for a woman. It's not fair to ask of a woman something else. Yes, I understand. The Western world has developed this idea that we're all animals, and let's see if we can hit a home run in 2 seconds flat. Okay, that's not being kind to a woman. That's not what she needs emotionally.
What is
a man's world where we're trying to teach a woman to be the way a man would like her to be. No, comes the Torah and says, I want you to learn how to be a kind, good, caring husband. A kind, good, caring husband is going to take a lot of time to show his affection. Showing his affection is just like you'd hug a child and you hold a child and you speak to a child and you don't find anything unnatural about it. Just because with a woman you know you're headed to somewhere else, just because with a woman you have desires to already be somewhere else, it doesn't mean you shouldn't take the same amount of time to hug and kiss and show the affection that she needs to hear. That's a huge part of the mitzvah. So I'm talking from a religious perspective, but it's even from an ethical perspective. We live in a world where women have been so abused in the name of equality. What's going on in the world today is abuse. A woman is supposed to live up to men's standards. Instead of men being considerate of women, and instead of intimacy being an idea of love, where a man takes the time that a woman would naturally need, that's not what's happening. A woman is gauged by how fast we can get to action. That's animalistic. That's not a kind husband. And the halacha trains us on the contrary. The halacha teaches us to take the time, and taking the time means taking a lot of time. Yes, it's not what comes naturally to a guy. To a guy, it's most natural to be quick about it. But that's not what she needs. Yeah.
Well, and actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but the ultimate accomplishment here is for the guy's benefit, because by taking the time to be with his wife, he's going to feel like a sense of long-term satisfaction, like, you know, you're going to feel closer together as a result of that, and there's not going to be the distance. And
even in the short term.
It's not just helping the woman there, it's helping right. The guy ultimately, right?
In the short term, too. What happens is there's a part of our psyche that's underdeveloped as men, the part called love. The physical part of it is fine. The emotional and spiritual and psychological part of it is underdeveloped. And when a man takes the time to express his affection, he is then forced to come in touch with his emotions that he ordinarily is not. And then the whole experience is a totally different experience. When people force a woman into their world, so then they're never going to gain and glean from the emotional wisdom that they can if they would take the time to do things in a way that's considerate of her needs. What happens next is, if a person can approach it in one of two ways. A person can say, okay, poor thing, this is what she needs. Let me put on the timer, we'll put on the stopwatch, and now we'll do what she needs. No, but if you take the time and do it and you mean it, so then you learn there's a whole new experience. And the person ultimately develops within himself sensitivities that he doesn't naturally have. Men are underdeveloped in this area, but they can be developed, and that's part of what a man can gain out of marriage. Now, the Talmud tells us, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, that there are 9 types of relationships that are improper. And you could see this in the Shulchan Aruch. The first one is a woman who was raped. So a man might say, we're married, she owes it to me. What do I care if she wants it or doesn't want it, wants it more, wants it less? No, the halacha says it's prohibited to rape one's wife. The next is a child from a woman who's hated, meaning if he hates her right now, but that doesn't change it. You know, guys are capable of doing that. You know, just divide the world. There are 2 things. Physical, we could be intimate, she's gorgeous, come on, I'm a man, she's a woman, we're normal, we're human beings. But no, so that's, the halacha says, you're not supposed to be intimate with your wife when you feel like you hate her. Work things out to a point where at least you don't feel like you hate her. Think about it. If you think about it, you'll see that all 9 things are focused on a normal, healthy, good, working relationship. It's taking intimacy from being an animal to being a caring human being. And it makes intimacy into the most beautiful thing. You guys are still going to see, and we're going to discuss it. The concept that people have, that in the religious world, there's a blanket with a hole, is the furthest thing from the truth. As you see from our discussion, the halacha expects you, on the contrary, to be romantic. If you know that that night you're going to be intimate with your wife, so then the expectation is that morning already you leave her a note, and there's much more closeness. The closeness leading up to intimacy at night is supposed to begin in the morning. I say in general, irrespective of intimacy, if a couple are sitting together and they're eating and they're sitting opposite one another, that's criminal. Why aren't they sitting on the same side of the table holding hands? Every touch is positive. You walk by your wife and you didn't caress her or give her a kiss as you walked by. Why? Why not? I'm not talking about in front of guests or in front of kids. I'm talking about between the couples themselves. The Torah expects us to be modest, but the Torah does expect us to be romantic and show affection where we can. The expectation is that when we pass something from one hand to the other, then our fingers are going to slip by and there's going to be a small caress in that. That's why the halacha says that when she's a needle, when she has her onset, we shouldn't pass things from hand to hand, because the expectation is that we're accustomed. The norm in our home is supposed to be that when we do pass things from hand to hand, there is a small touch there, a show of affection. Down to that level, the halacha expects us. It's not, you're not obligated, but the expectation is that at every opportunity, we're going to show our affection. Again, modestly, no one has to see it. We're building a connection within. Our point isn't to show all the neighbors and all the friends, look at what great friends we are. We're going to walk down the street and put our hands around one another and kiss on the bus and do all the stuff everyone else does. No. If you really cherish it, if it's something real, I don't have to show everyone else. I have to have it in my home that way. Between me and her, it has to be that way. I don't have to go flaunting to everyone else what a relationship I have with my wife. It's no one's business. But within the home, there it should be at every interval, every possibility. Next is b'nei nidui, if one of the couple has been ostracized. Next is b'nei tmura, if ostracized. Halachically, there's been a court ruling that people should stay away from the person. There can be many examples of that. Let's say a guy refuses to give his wife a get. She's come to court and she's proven that he's wrong. And then they decide they want to be intimate. But the court's ruled that he's ostracized over that. For example, I'm saying there can be many reasons. Bnei Tmura, he's with her and he's thinking of someone else. That's one of the reasons why the halacha wants a person to be intimate when he doesn't hear the neighbors talking. That's why some people think they should be up past midnight to be intimate. No, Kabbalistically there's an idea of that. But if people wait till past midnight, then how are they going to do everything we just discussed about being romantic? They're going to be falling off their faces the next morning. You want to do that, so you do it. And you close the windows. You shouldn't be hearing the neighbors talking. You shouldn't come to think about the neighbor's wife. But the halacha, that's one of the things that one of the 9 types of intimacy that the halacha says one shouldn't do. Next is bnei moredet. When the woman is what's called rebellious. She tells her husband, I don't want you. And even if he can convince her at the time of intimacy to be intimate, but she's basically told him, I don't want you, I want to get divorced. So this is a touchy one, because sometimes couples have they have a fight, and the wife can say something like that, and then they make up, so they made up, that's fine. But you have a situation where she says, you're the scum of the earth, I don't want to be with you. And they don't make up, but she's willing to be intimate. And there the halacha says, no. You can't just go and say, let's both fill our physical needs, even though right now she hates his guts. It doesn't work. B'nei shachrut, that we mentioned, if a woman, if a husband or a wife is drunk. B'nei grushat alev, if one has decided in their heart that he's divorcing his wife. It's a done deal, it's over. He's already filed the papers in the rabbanut, he just hasn't told his wife yet. But in his mind, it's finished, it's over. He's hired the lawyers, has everything done. Not that he's like wondering, is this marriage going to work and I really think I should get out. That's not what we're talking about. Where he's really decided, in his heart, she's divorced, it's over, so then he's not allowed to be intimate with her. Yeah, Ari, you were saying?
Okay, so that had to do with what we were saying a couple points back where, I'm trying to rewind which point it was, because to me it was kind of important. I'll get back to you.
Okay. So you have another one that's prohibited, and that's where, let's say he's married with two women. And he thinks he's with one, and he's really with the other. He's not thinking about it. So he's thinking about his other wife. Or he's thinking about his former wife. That's also not permitted. He should be thinking about her.
With all of these situations, which make perfect sense, before one starts, obviously. Once one starts, you get it out of your mind. But you know, what do you tell your wife? Honey, we got to stop, you know.
So get it out of your mind. No, he has to focus on that.
That's what I'm saying. You right. Get that before. That's
or before if one is plagued during, so...
Yeah. You know, do your best.
Yeah. And the last one we'll leave for when you're having your chassan classes. You'll still discuss it with your teachers. That's the one which we said we're not going to discuss right now. Say that. Okay, so when we say that one should have pure thoughts, what do we see from this halacha? Pure thoughts begin with being focused on loving the person you're with. Not thinking I'm going to divorce her, not thinking I hate her guts, not thinking, okay. We'll already deal with the next question that people asked. Are you allowed to be intimate when someone else is in the room or when other people are around or awake? So, if they're in the room, then no. Intimacy is supposed to be a private matter. No one's supposed to know what's going on. If the kids are awake in another part of the house and they don't know what's going on in the bedroom, that's fine. Yes?
What were the other four cases?
We covered 8 out of 9.
I only got 5.
Okay. So we said rape, hates her, one of them is ostracized, he thinks it's a different wife, she tells him she wants out, one of them is drunk, he's decided to divorce her, he's not sure who he's with, he's thinking of someone else. So that's 8 out of 9. And the last one, it'll just take too much time to explain the concept. It's a discussion of how they should walk into intimacy, that it shouldn't be vulgar speech that leads into it. That there's a way that Allah expects us to talk about it, and that just deserves a little bit... 5-10 minutes, which we don't have right now. That's why I'm not going into the last one. Because if I say it without explaining it, I've done nothing. So that's why I'm saying that one you'll still learn when you're learning towards marriage. Okay. As we're going through the halachos, we might as well cover, because people asked a bunch of questions. You're not supposed to look at that place. The idea is that that's a small element of modesty. If a couple wants to shower together, they can. If a couple wants to be naked with the lights on, they can. There's one area where he's not supposed to look, and that's her most private place. But more than that, that's up to them. He wants to give her a massage, that's great. There's no prohibition, on the contrary. If she's comfortable with the lights being on, meaning the halacha says they're not supposed to be intimate when there's a source of light in the room or there's light shining into the room, for two reasons. One, out of modesty, and two, because she might be uncomfortable with it. And quite honestly, all the pictures they're showing you, all the billboards and all the sites and all that, that's not real. There's a ton of makeup and all kinds of effects that they're doing. There's no woman that really looks like any of the ads. But at the end of the day, a person has all kinds of expectations, and that's why it's usually not in the guy's interest to have the lights on and stuff like that even beforehand. The more modesty a person maintains, the more exciting he's going to be. When a person sees, he's more apt to be disappointed. But the nature of a man is that he does want to see. So other than the time that they're actually being intimate, other than that, everything else that's permitted, that's up to them. There's one spot he shouldn't see. Everything else, if he's comfortable and she's comfortable, they could do whatever they want. They want to shower together, it's permissible. The Torah recommends that the classical position is the position a person should be in. It's an idea of modesty. But if the couple want to do things differently, it's not recommended, it's not prohibited. People asked, can a person do things outdoors? So the halacha expects that a person, when the couple are intimate, from the waist down, they will be covered. Let's say a couple want to they have a private place, they want to go and be in a tent, that's fine. They want to do things outdoors, so that's not right. They want to do things they're in the nature reserve, and they know no one's out there for 15 miles, there's no one, no one's going to come surprise them. First of all, I don't trust them. I think someone will surprise them. Just like they're out there, so there's that Joe Schmo who's standing there with the binoculars. Okay, so that's I don't think that's right. But if they want to say, no, we're confident, there's no one around, and no one can see and nothing, so then there's only the issue that they should be covered. Again, you're not allowed to do it in the daytime, because you're not allowed to do it, you're not allowed to actually be intimate when there's light. But let's say at night they want to go down to the pond, and they know there's no one around and whatever, that's up to them. You know, then technically they're covered. I'm saying they have to be covered from the waist down. More than that is a question of modesty. Again, provided either it's night or it's dark. If a couple want to go here in Israel, you can shut the tree seam. So even by day, it's as dark as a night. So if they have that darkness in their bedroom and they want to be intimate by day, that's permitted. If they're going to be by night and they're going to be under the stars, but they're covered from the waist down with a blanket, provided that they're confident that no one else is around, it's not modest, but it's not prohibited. It's up to them. That's levels of modesty. They may not be intimate where other people are around. You can't go into your backyard and say, you know, I'm not minding my own business. The neighbor shouldn't look over the fence. That's not right. Again, you're out somewhere in the wilderness and you're confident that no one's around. Okay, yeah, I can't tell you no. I could say I wouldn't recommend it, but that's, you know, that's their business. Do people have to stay in the bedroom? No, they just shouldn't be in a place where there's any holy works around. That means you can't do it when there's a mezuzah in the room, unless you cover the mezuzah with two coverings. So there's one, the plastic case, plus another covering. You can't be intimate when there's tefillin in the room, unless it's covered with two coverings, the regular coverings plus another one. If you have books, if you have books of Torah in the room, so they need two coverings. You want to be lenient, you can rely on the opinion that the jacket is one covering and then put another covering over it. Not everyone agrees with that, but okay. We said you can't have people around, you can't have people knowing, and that's why when you're a guest at someone's house, either bring your own blankets, but you can't use their blankets because the assumption is that there'll be some remnants left over from the intimacy and then the host will know what went on there. And that's not nice. So the halacha says when you're a guest at someone's house, either bring your own covers. You got to figure out a way of doing it where the host isn't going to know. You're not really supposed to. The halacha says don't be intimate by a host. But the idea is don't be intimate because he's going to find out. So if you can circumvent that, you can circumvent that. Yeah.
What's the source of the mezuzah? Because if this is to bring down Kedusha, and the Shekhinah dwells with you and the wife, you know, it seems like it's almost by covering that you're doing something that isn't quite holy, you know? It gives that impression.
It's an interesting balance. You're right. Now, on the one hand, we say there's an element of holiness. On the other hand, there is an aspect where the couple are not dressed and there is something physical going on here. And the halacha says you're not supposed to do it when there are works of holiness in the room, unless they're covered with two coverings, and even then, ideally, get them out of the room. If you can't get them out of the room, so usually our mezuzahs are on the outside of the door. But people were asking, do you have to be in the bedroom? So the answer is you don't have to be in the bedroom. You want to be in the shower, you want to whatever you want, fine. But then you might run into the issue where The mezuzah is a question.
We're trying to bring, if it's done correctly, the Shekhinah into it. And it just gives that, you know,
right?
Stereotypes of the, you know, that there's something unclean about it, which is not true.
I'm saying, but there's still something.
If it's true, it could be, but the way we're saying it's not. It's supposed to
and even so, okay. That's a, okay. It's a Gemara, it's a Shulchan Aruch. It's not like some far out stringency. Yes.
Isn't it only in theory that the man who cannot be naked in front of holy things? In theory.
Technically, you're saying a woman's private parts are more covered. I don't think that's a maskana of the Gemara. I think, but I have to look it up again.
Because maybe it's only because of the man.
Right. That's a good point. I have to look it up again. Right. Yes?
So are we saying that even if both the spouses want to have relations and there's light, can't be done.
Correct.
They must have darkness.
Okay, so the level of darkness is, there are two halachos in the darkness, maybe three. One is, you can't do something that's uncomfortable for her. Two is, you cannot have a source of light in the room. Meaning there cannot be a light lit in the room.
What about a candle?
No. So you put out the candle when it comes time to be intimate. Yeah, you can have the candle lit until. And number three is, by intimate, I mean when the man enters his wife. I'm saying that's from that moment onward, from the moment beforehand onward, that's when there shouldn't be a source of light in the room. And number three is, how much light can there be creeping into the room? So there the halacha says that on a night of a full moon, if the moon isn't shining directly on the couple, meaning the moon is outside, right? But if you've noticed, on a night of a full moon, you have plenty of light coming in from the moon. Right? That's permissible, that much light in the room. So, provided that the moon isn't shining directly on them, meaning it's not like you could have a beam of light coming on the couple, that's not right. But if there's a full moon, and it's not shining directly on them, that's okay. So that's the amount of light you could have seeping in, provided there isn't a source of light in the room. Remember, we said you can't have a source of light in the room, but how much light could come creeping?
This is for a separate reason.
That's right. That's because the Torah, the halacha wants a person to do things. Part of the modesty is that the room, at the time of intimacy, should not be lit. How dark does it have to be? That's how dark it has to be. That's a lot of light. That's not so little. Try. You'll see one night. Wait until there's a full moon. Where are we now? We're almost Rosh Chodesh. So you don't have a full moon, but you just had one. But you'll wait till you have a full moon, and you'll see. Shut the lights in your bedroom. You'll see. There's that gives a lot of light.
Another question.
Yeah.
So then, and they also must be covered by like a blanket or something.
We said from the waist down, kabbalistically from the head down, halachically from the waist down.
So both of them. Like a lock.
But yes, both of them.
So then, what's the deal with?
What do you mean both of them? It happens naturally. One's on top of the other. So when that one's going to be covered from the waist down.
No, the other one. I understand that, but then what is the deal? What is the actual deal about the blanket with the sheet with the hole or something?
I didn't mention any sheet with the hole. I said it's a misconception.
Huh?
I came from Tzitzit. A goy walked by the Jewish person doing that.
Gentlemen, we're short on time. Anything else? Yes.
So my question was, if you took all that literally, you would actually be able to come out and say, I've never seen my wife naked.
No, we said you're allowed to see one another naked. That's permissible. We said only at the time of intimacy does it have to be dark in the room. When they're not actually being intimate, up until that moment, they could do what they want. They want to give one another a massage. Everything they want is permissible. That's up to them. There's one place that he shouldn't see.
So it's important to separate between, like, you really shouldn't and it's a sin.
Like, I think so, I've been pretty. I've been trying to be very clear on what's permissible, prohibited, and preferable. And this is, to the best of my understanding, something that a person is not. I don't like going into the question of is it a sin, what weight of it. No, that not. Yeah.
The rabbis or the Torah?
So that's a good question. It's interesting because the Shulchan Aruch quotes a pasuk. Shulchan Aruch doesn't usually do that. Shulchan Aruch says, there's a verse that says you should be a God-fearing person, and by looking there, you're not going to be a God-fearing person. And the implication in the Shulchan Aruch is that it's biblical. I'm not convinced he really means it's biblical. I'm really not convinced. About those two things, the Shulchan Aruch quotes a verse about not seeing a woman's most private part and about not kissing and not putting one's mouth on a woman's most private part. The Shulchan Aruch actually quotes a verse, and the question is, did he really mean it's biblical? The simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch is yes. I'm not convinced, but I haven't yet found the commentary that says it. So I have to stay with the simple understanding, and that is that it is. But I don't know. In all honesty, I don't know. Well, you don't know the verse, so...
No, I just want to say that you proved the point between man and woman, because you have, when you said intimate, you thought about the light being on when you were doing the act, not the full thing. So that was like the whole point.
The question I asked, I mean,
guys, no, let's, we got 10 minutes.
The light on doing the thing, but you didn't think about
the
full
thing. Do you expect that any religious woman that you're going to marry would also follow all of these rules?
I think it's in her interest. I think it's in the couple's interest. That's what I've been trying to explain, that these are rules that, at the end of the day, they support a good, healthy relationship. Which of the rules did you find constricting? The idea of light?
I don't think it's a matter of anybody, if the lights are on or off, or I understand, you know, maybe there's a guy out there that's telling me the lights need to be off. I don't see
it. I hear. It's very interesting. I'll tell you a story. About 6-7 years ago, we had a student here who was getting married, and he put his hand on my shoulders. We were learning towards his wedding. He put his hand on my shoulders and he said, "Rabbi, you were with one virgin. I was with 17. There's nothing you could teach me." So he went into marriage, and we went through the halachos, but on all the other things, which ordinarily I discuss with Chassanim about how to be a good husband and make your wife happy, and the whole idea of having positive foreplay and taking the time, and some of the things we touched on, but we didn't go into details over here. He forewent that, and he basically said to me, "I got more experience than you do, and I've made more women happy than you've thought about in your life. Don't go telling me stories." So I respected that, and I said, "Fine, you know, I'm not gonna force a person." You know, we're very close. I mean, he was at my house for maybe 2 years straight, every Shabbos morning he'd come to learn. He was a serious guy. I mean, every Shabbos morning we'd learn. I used to have a class in my house Shabbos morning. After, those who wanted to wake up for Sikkim would daven early, and then we'd come and learn, and we'd have cake and Kiddush, and we'd learn many different things, whatever guys wanted. But that was back when I was in the neighborhood on Shabbos. So he was a steady. He was the only steady, on his day. Fine. 2 months into marriage, his wife calls up, and she's very displeased with him. And then he calls up and he says to me, "You know, religious intimacy is very different than what I'm used to. I'm used to having all the lights on, having mirrors in every part of the room, and being very focused on the physical aspect of what's going on here. And suddenly, the halacha expects me to be focused on loving and not just focused on the physical aspect of what's going on here. And I don't know how to do any of this." You know, it taught me something. So I think that even in this area, a person who tries it, although he will find it a little bit difficult, because it's true that a man's nature is that he wants to see and he wants to uncover. But being that the halacha doesn't limit a person that much on what he's going to see, at the end of the day, there's very small area that the halacha tells him not to look at. And we're only talking about a specific time where, if you followed everything we've said until now, you're spending most of the time in the bedroom doing a lot of other things. And it's only the climax. We didn't even discuss the post-climax, but only the climax that's going to be that level of intimacy. So then I think that a person can discover, if a person gives it a chance, that on the contrary, it doesn't take away from the intimacy, it adds to the intimacy. At the end of the day, the nature of a woman is different than the nature of a man, and I think that when a person gives it a chance, a person discovers a totally different level of connection in the dark. I think that you can even have conversations that you wouldn't be able to have face-to-face in the light when you're in the dark. And there's a level of intimacy, and darkness lends itself to that intimacy. The idea that the two are connecting and the physical is less important, even though it's very much there. We're not saying it's not there.
I'm just thinking also the act of, like, you're in the middle of doing all kinds of things for an hour and a half, feeling great, everything's good. Excuse me, man. Let me go turn out the light.
So that's the concept that the pasuk says, "Chacham enav v'rosho." An intelligent person thinks of things in advance, and either he has a switch next to his bed, or he does what Ari said. He has candlelight, and he has and that's something you could blow out. I mean, there are many ways that use your head. You're right. A person has to think about it in advance. Okay, so coming back to the question of what thoughts a person should have, so I skipped that. That was somewhere over here. I don't know where I skipped that, but basically there are levels. A person has there is a level of piety where a person can be super holy and think about I'm doing Hashem's mitzvah when I'm being with my wife. But what you've seen from all of this is that it's perfectly. Let's find it. I want to read it to you from the Shulchan Aruch inside. Kitzur, if a person is focused on the fact that he's loving his wife and that he's doing what he's supposed to be doing with his wife, that's good. There are higher levels of purity, Seder. Okay. The question was asked, we got so many questions we didn't even finish. what should a person be thinking? He should be thinking he loves his wife when he's with his wife. And she should be thinking she loves him. Remember, the halacha wanted you thinking about her. If you're on the level where you could be thinking, I'm doing Hashem's mitzvah and being with my wife, okay, that's a nice thing too. But I think for most people that's not realistic. What is the degree of privacy that a married couple keeps? So no one's supposed to know when they're being intimate. It's no one's business. It's supposed to be something that's intimate, that's between them. Should a married couple be intimate when they are mad at each other? So they have to placate one another. Even though a husband can be intimate a second after he was upset at his wife, a woman cannot. The halacha expects a person to take the time to placate his wife. If they're both happy and calm and okay with one another, then that's fine. The fact that they had a fight a half hour ago is irrelevant. What?
How come a woman can't?
Because a woman feels things more deeply and it takes her more time to calm down. And the whole idea of intimacy to a man, the physical aspect is much more alive. Just like a man could do it in 2 minutes flat, so too a man can do it 2 minutes after a fight. And by a woman, just like there has to be a whole build-up to intimacy, so there's also this idea that if you just yelled at me a minute ago, you can't expect me to be at the peak of connection right now. It doesn't work. Should parents be intimate when their children are home? Of course. They just have to do it privately. What about the age of the children? So when a child is nursing, so you're going to see that children always get up when you're about to be intimate, right? That's part of life. It's like Murphy's Law. Okay, you learn to deal with that too. Questions about birth control, a person has to consult when he's married. That's a very good question. People shouldn't take it lightly. People very often make the mistake of using birth control right after marriage. And then at the end of the day, it can be very hurtful to the marriage. Intimacy is totally different when you're working towards something and you're building a family. And when it's just with the use of birth control, aside from many other calculations about when it's permissible and when not, a person should find a halachic authority that they feel comfortable, understands them as chozrim b'tshuva, and if they also feel that they need a certain amount of time being intimate and being together without children. So someone who can hear them and understand them and think it through with them and come to a conclusion with them about what where they should be. Can intimacy take place during the day? We said provided that you can make the room dark. It is considered a correct way of life that we learned from Ahasuerus, that as vulgar and as cruel as he was only raping the girls at night. So on the one hand, he's a terrible human being. On the other hand, you look at how Chazal were balanced. They said, we're going to throw the book at him. They spend 7 pages telling us what a terrible person he is. And somewhere within it, they say, but you should know one thing he did right. He was only with the girls at night. By day, he was a productive human being. He's a terrible person. But that is something. You see, even a vulgar, terrible human being like Ahasuerus knew that by day, that's not the right time. But it's not prohibited, you know. Sorry, if a person, he and his wife are amenable to it, that's up to them. I even tell couples sometimes. Sometimes you have couples that never have time. They're always tired. So I tell them, so get a good night's rest Friday night. And Shabbos afternoon, close all the blinds. And take the time to be together the way you should be. Because sometimes couples in today's harried world, they never have a normal time to get together. So as much as you tell them, take 3 hours off, get home at 6 o'clock at night, and get to the bedroom at 7 o'clock at night, so that you're being intimate at 9 or 10, and not that you get to the bedroom at 11:30, and you don't even have koch to be romantic, and then it doesn't play itself out the way it should be. As much as I say that to people, no one listens. So sometimes I'm cornered, and I say, okay, so Shabbos afternoon, close the blinds, close the curtains, do your Suda Shlishit and Mincha early, and you know it's you're going into the bedroom at 2 o'clock, and you have till 11 o'clock at night to be together, do whatever you want, but you know, you can have a normal amount of time. So sometimes that's even recommended, to take the afternoon off and be together. But that's not the proper way. Ideally, people should be productive by day, and the time for intimacy is at night. But it's not prohibited. If someone's not married, should they sleep with a Jewish girl or a non-Jewish girl? So that's a tough question, because you could never answer a question about doing two things that are prohibited. But you should never go with a non-Jewish girl. Meaning it's prohibited to be with a Jewish girl before marriage, and if she hasn't gone to mikvah, and it's prohibited to be with a non-Jewish girl. But being with a non-Jewish girl is one of the worst things on the planet. That's what I can say. So I can't tell you to go with a Jewish girl, because that's prohibited. But I can tell you that for sure you shouldn't go with a non-Jewish girl. What?
One of the worst things on the planet?
Correct.
Worse than like the Holocaust.
I didn't say that. I meant as far as the things that you're going to do. As far as the sins that a person can do to himself, I think that you have to realize that carries one of the greatest weights. It's one of the worst things you can do to yourself. I didn't mean, you know, it's worse than genocide. I meant as far as the things you're going to consider, so you have to realize that carries a much greater weight than most other things. I can't tell you to go with a Jewish girl, because that's prohibited. But you have to realize that the weight of going with a non-Jewish girl is much, much worse. There's a stereotype that religious intimacy is bland and old-fashioned. Is there room for creativity? Sure, that's what we just discussed. What's acceptable? Anything the couple is okay with? Obviously, we discussed that the classical position is like the direction of thought. But I want to add a few points to that. You guys want to pick up on this next week? Because we're really out of time. Or should we take 10 more minutes? 10 more minutes? Okay. There's not only one way for a couple to be intimate. A couple can do whatever they please. The direction that Halacha wants us to think is in terms of taking on the classical position where he's on top and she's on bottom. But what's in the realm of permissible, you could do with your wife. You could do whatever you want, so long as you're both amenable to it. But you have to realize that King David, at one point, let himself be with his wives without limit. And he thought to himself, this is how I'm going to conquer my desire, by letting myself do whatever I want. And he erred, because we have a rule. Ever katan yesh ba'adam. There's a relatively small limb within a human body. Your arm is bigger than that. Your legs are bigger than that. Masbio, if you try to satiate it, raev, they'll always be hungry. Marivo, but if you keep it at bay, you feed it what it needs, but not try to satiate it, so then saver, it'll be satiated. We live in a generation where we're always tempted. You try to do clean things on the internet and they bombard you with filthy things. You think you're going to do everything right and you still get bombarded with things. We have to realize what's happening. By advertising all kinds of things, and when people visit pornographic sites, what they're really doing to themselves is they're developing fantasies that are unhealthy, that are unreal, things that no normal woman would ever agree to. And then a person walks into marriage and a person is going to be sorely disappointed. You know that in the United States, I think it's over 80% of divorces, when interviewed, said that one of the great issues they had was that the husband was not satisfied with their intimacy because he kept trying to get his wife to replicate things he saw on porn sites. Now, there's a reason why that's the greatest business online, because we're all human and every person has a desire to see these things. The Gemara says on the Pasuk, Tov mar'ei einayim mehalach nafesh. The Pasuk says, Tov mar'ei einayim. The sight of the eyes is better mehalach nafesh than doing the thing itself. And that's the secret behind pornography. That the real thing is never going to be as good as the pictures they could show you. It's not. No one ever says it is. There's no one in the world that says differently. Okay, I don't know what everyone in the world says, but generally, it's even in the secular world that's agreed upon, and even the secular world is trying to curtail, to put a limit to the harmful effects of the pornography that's out there. We have to realize, like the Rambam says, now one of the sins that a person does that's very hard to do tshuva about is when one sins with what one looks at, because a person feels like, what did I do wrong? I only looked. You know, what's so terrible? I didn't hurt anyone. So aside from the biblical prohibition, I'm not even dealing with the biblical prohibition. There's the problem that it causes within a person. A person who sees something like that, it's there. It's etched in his mind. It's very hard to get it out. I have a friend who's a bachelor. We're the same age. We learned Chavrusa 15, 16 years ago. He's still a bachelor. And I cornered him one day. I said, let's go out for coffee. I want to understand what's bugging you. I keep trying to set you up with really good girls. Why aren't you willing to get married? So he said to me, I saw too much pornography in my life. He said to me, you know, after everything I've seen, it's very hard to settle on what I'm going out with. You know, they're all great girls. But at the end of the day, what... she doesn't come match up with everything else I've seen. And I felt so bad for him. So I discussed with him, getting help, you know, try to whitewash your mind. He said to me, you know how hard it is to erase all the things I saw? And I understand him. So we have to realize that marriage can be much better than all the things that a person has seen. But one is hurting oneself and not even giving it a chance. You know, what was the generation of the flood? They were running after girls, and they were sleeping with girls left and right. Why? Because women were viewed as a piece of meat to be exploited, to be used. And that's what pornography really does. It shocks me how the Western world can speak about equality when they permit this filth to go online, when they permit ads to go up that are so degrading to women. What are you saying about a woman when you show her half naked, that she's worthless? All she's worth is what her body can show. What is she? Where's the equality here? That's equality. Equality is what we're doing. We look at a woman and we cherish her and we speak about her value as a human being. Now, when we speak about marriage, when we speak about what's supposed to happen in the bedroom, what we've been discussing tonight, there, that's when you value a human being, the human part of the being. But pornography, that's the most derisive treatment of a woman that I could think of. It's the epitome of deriding a woman. So, aside from the halachic aspects, I know it's a difficult thing. A person does tshuva, this is one of the great challenges. It's normal that a person has desires. We haven't even discussed masturbating yet, which is a whole other parsha. Maybe we should touch on that for a minute. I'm not talking about the prohibitive aspect of masturbation. I'm just saying a person should try to wean himself of it. It's difficult. It's not easy. A doctor once told me, I prescribe it to every teenager. I tell him, I tell every person, you can't be normal and keep growing without it. And I called a friend of mine who's a religious doctor, and he said, sure, that's what they teach us in medical school. That when you have a teenager, you tell them that a healthy teenager should be masturbating at least twice a week. So if that's what the Western world is telling everyone, so then the assumption is that this is a challenge for everyone. And a person has to realize that when possible, a person has to outgrow it. I suggested to some people, if a person feels pressure, so let him go to sleep on his stomach and let nature take its course rather than actively doing it. A person has to wean himself of it. One of the healthy things in a marriage is that you don't have an out. You have to be with your wife, right? You're sort of cornered, and that forces you to build the relationship. I'm not discussing the halachic aspects of masturbation. That's not what our class is about. And I feel that it's wrong when people make a big deal about how prohibited masturbation is, because at the end of the day, a person who's done tshuva at the age that everyone sitting here is, it's very, very hard to make that switch, and a person is used to having a girlfriend, and a person is used to a million things, suddenly is in an all-boys environment. I remember this happens about once a year, that a guy comes in and he talks about Machon Meir and he's asking about Machon Meir, and then at one point he leans over across the table and says, Rabbi, so everyone here is gay? I say, why? He says, come on, this is an old guy institution. What's going on here? You guys haven't seen that yet? Okay, this happens here at Machon Meir. I get it about once a year. But a real newcomer to Judaism comes in and asks about Judaism, and he says, I don't get it. There's all guys' dorms and everything, all guys. What's going on here? So that's true. It's not easy. And that's why I don't want to discuss the prohibition aspect, because sometimes part of the growth is that a person says, okay, I'm not with my girlfriend. I'm not with all the girls I've been with. I'm not going to the bars. I'm not doing anything else. Don't close off this last corner for me, because I'm going to go out of my mind. And I'm not going to be the one to tell him, that's why I never discuss it. I never say it's prohibited, because I feel like it's a part of growth. But you have to be headed. You have to grow in this area too. You have to realize that it's a crutch, and you should be trying to work your way out of it. And like everything else, you work slowly but surely. So I think we've addressed almost all the questions. Here we've addressed everything here, and here we've addressed everything here, and last page, so the last page is a tough one. So I suggest that whoever asked the last page, we addressed most of the things on this page. There's one aspect we didn't address, I think. I'm not sure what a person means here, and I don't want to ask, because I think that maybe a person doesn't want to explain in front of everyone. So I'll address what's the actual status of a ben nida. So the halacha says that a person who has intimacy with a woman when she is a nida, when she hasn't gone to mikvah, so that child is more apt to have bad traits. So what does a woman do when he's dating a girl or a guy who's chozer b'tshuva, and the chances are they're ben nida. I mean, their mother never went to mikvah. So the assumption that's brought in many, many halachic authorities is that when the halacha says that a person who's a ben nida is more apt to have bad traits, so that's an assumption. Meaning the halacha is not saying don't marry a child of a nida. The halacha is saying realize that spiritually it affects a person. Now, like Rabbi Feinstein writes, let's say you're dating a guy and you see that he has excellent traits, but his mother wasn't observant. You have no reason to think she went to mikvah. But then how come he's such a fine guy? So could be that before his mother got pregnant with him, she went swimming in the lake, and she went with a bathing suit that wasn't so tight, and halachically she actually immersed herself in that lake, and that was a kosher mikvah. So like Rabbi Feinstein writes, look at what you got in front of you. If the guy in front of you or the girl in front of you has good traits, so then you have to assume that somehow God took care of it, that when she got pregnant with him, she did something that was a kosher mikvah. And that's why we don't tell people don't date a person who's chozer b'tshuva because maybe he's a ben nida. So practically, we don't really we don't have that that application. We have to know that it's biblically prohibited to be with a woman when she's a nida, etc. But as far as when we're dating someone or when we look at ourselves, we don't have to be we don't concern ourselves with that. Are there other things couples can do besides intercourse? Yeah, we said you could do everything you want. We said one thing which not. There's one place where a man's mouth shouldn't be. Does a woman's pleasure have the same status as a man's? No. A man has to spend time to ensure that a woman gets pleasure. It's a husband's job. Part of his job as a husband is to give his wife pleasure. And that's his mitzvah. And I don't know other than that what a person meant when they asked if they're the same status. But if they want to email me, I'll be happy to deal with that. And the same is true with the first question on this page. About a piece of meat, so that again, so bottom line, there is a place where the Talmud discusses a husband's rights within a marriage. And the bottom line, if you look at the Chelkas Mechokek over there on the Shulchan Aruch, so you see that what we come out with is that there, like we said over here, that if the two are mutually consenting, so then there's very little that they're limited to. Again, a person is expected that when he actually ejaculates, it should be in his wife. There is the concept of motzi zera levatala, that a person shouldn't spill his seed, spill it around. Other than that, that's a couple wants to do whatever they want. That's up to them. But it has to be consenting. So that area where the Talmud discusses an opinion about, the Talmud uses a metaphor about a piece of meat that no one gets involved when you buy a piece of meat, how you roast it or cook it or do whatever you want with it, so too no one's going to get involved with what you do at home. So the way we rule on that is that the two have to agree with what they want to do at home. It's not that he could do whatever he pleases. And I think that any other questions can be asked one-on-one or by email or whatever. We've gone over time by 20 minutes.